We're going to be turning now to an interview that was recorded with a journalist originally from Toronto named Ali Mustafa, who died this past week in Aleppo, Syria. He was killed under the bombardment of the Syrian Air Force, which were hitting a civilian area of Aleppo, where Ali was taking photographs. Ali has worked for many years as an independent journalist involved with projects like the Media Co-op, and over recent years had traveled extensively within Syria and also spent time on the streets of Egypt during the revolution. His travels also brought him to occupied Palestine. In the past week, there's been quite a bit of focus on Ali's death, his passing while being on the ground in Syria. And I think most meaningfully, this interview with Ali that was recorded here on CKUT before he died illustrates the reality that Ali was, in fact, a people's journalist. His words and his vision was about telling the stories of the oppressed and being on the ground where the corporate and mainstream media refused to go, being there on the front lines and doing journalism out of principles of solidarity and not out of this conservative notion of journalism as a career. In Ali's voice, you hear a beautiful human spirit, somebody who was very committed to his work as an independent journalist, but also an internationalist. And we miss Ali very much here at CKUT, at the Community News Collective. And we wanted to share with you his voice and his perspective on Syria today, in the week of his passing.
My name is Ali Mustafa. I'm a Toronto-based freelance journalist. I originally went to Syria in March of this year for 2 months and returned in May. I originally went there as a natural outgrowth of some of my previous work in the region, having been to Israel-Palestine, later on in Egypt, and now with what was happening in Syria, I felt it was very important to be there and to cover what was happening. And that my objectives for going there were kind of simple, because as the UN head of the refugee agency said, the worst humanitarian crisis he has seen since the post-World War II era and possibly ever. And it was, of course, something that I felt was not being adequately covered in the mainstream media and needed journalists coming from a critical perspective to be there to actually cover the story in a different, nuanced, and more contextualized kind of way than we were getting from those outlets. That's pretty much the idea.
Yourself as a progressive writer in Toronto, somebody who's followed things from a social justice perspective for a long time, not only Syria, but has followed different struggles in Canada, but globally. What are your reflections after this trip, and what did it mean for you? I mean, where do you stand today, watching what's happening in Syria and being back in Toronto? How is that?
Well, first of all, to see what is happening in Syria firsthand, and then to leave and come back here to Toronto knowing that it's still going on and it's getting worse by the day. I struggle every day with the thought of how we can, as progressives, sort of influence the outcome and show solidarity with ordinary Syrians on the ground. You know, I came to the conclusion that images of the horror of what's happening in Syria, the death, the destruction, the displacement, all of that, as well as the statistics of, you know, over now 1.5 million people reduced to refugees and another 4 to 5 million people internally displaced. All of that does nothing to, while it's very tragic and sad, it does nothing to move people to action. And actually, it leaves them quite impotent and powerless because of the sheer enormity of what's happening. And then, of course, the fact that our government is not one that can be so easily petitioned to do something or not do something, as was the case with the Iraq War, for example. And so I was left, you know, kind of very demoralized by that specter of what was happening, knowing that no matter how much you try to show people what's happening, whether through images or stats or reporting of any kind, that nothing would really change the outcome or move people anyway. But the trip changed a lot of that for me, because by actually going to Syria, seeing the situation myself and meeting people on the ground who are still active and organizing in the pockets of the liberated areas in northern Syria, I saw that there is actually, you know, a very tangible, concrete, and material way that us as people or progressives in the West can show support and solidarity. And I'll give you one example. There is a village in the suburbs of Aleppo called Atarif, where I visited, where a new local council has emerged. But it's actually what these civilian councils are and represent is a sort of alternative governance structure emerging in the vacuum left vacant by the state, you know, in these liberated areas. And they're taking care of basic needs like water and electricity and food and opening schools for primary education and so on. There's also a bakery in the village. That bakery has been shelled over the course of fighting in these past 2 years over 17 times. But each time, right the day, even though people have been injured and several killed in these blasts, the next day they go, they repair the bakery, and they start production again of the bread, because, you know, bread is so vitally important for Syrians as a staple food. And that bakery, it doesn't only feed the civilians of Atara, but 17 surrounding villages as well. So it's immensely important that it's up and running. The other problem, though, aside from the bombardment and shelling that they face on a daily basis and keeping the bakery running, is they don't have wheat. Basically, they're living under siege in these areas. So where do they get the wheat? They get it from groups like Jabhat al-Nusra, the radical Islamic jihadi group fighting alongside the rebels. Jabhat al-Nusra, they get the wheat from the government areas that they control, and the FSA also helps with securing shipment there. The problem is they have a wheat mill, but it's not functioning. It's completely broken down, and they don't have the technical expertise to operate it, because all of the technicians and experts fled once the fighting started. See, and where we fit into this equation is we can actually support, you know, these local councils with these type of startup projects to get the wheat mills up and running, or with technical expertise if it's available. So one, that they have the bread that they need to be able to survive and to oppose the government that you know, through the peaceful means which we all claim to support but deny, you know, whose existence we deny. And the other point is that we remove the line of support for groups like Jabhat al-Nusra, who we don't support, and we can all unanimously agree on that point that they are, you know, an encumbrance to the progress of the revolution. If we want to support the civilian actors on the ground, we don't like these radical jihadi elements who are worsening the problem, then there's a very clear solution to that. And this is one clear and concrete example of that. So you basically hit two birds with one stone. So you're supporting the people, allowing them to support themselves, most importantly. So this is a moving away from the sort of model of charity and aid and helping us feel better and sleep at night, but actually doing nothing for Syrians on the ground in the long term. And we also change the overall dynamic on the ground of the way the people are surviving in the liberated areas in northern Syria. Because one of the main reasons of support for groups like Jabhat al-Nusra is, yes, one, they're among the best fighters and the most organized. Two, they don't loot and steal like some of the Free Syrian Army fighters. But three, and most importantly, is the kind of relief and humanitarian work they do, which is, again, filling an important void, that if, you know, international progressive and solidarity activists like us seed will only be filled by those kind of forces. And so this is something that we need to keep in mind. And again, we aren't hearing from those voices. They've been crowded out. But again, we can, when we identify them, build a relationship with them, we can go about the process of actually building a more a concrete line of contact and helping with these projects that are so desperately needed there.